Blog Talk Radio.
There comes a time,
what are you doing?
When we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that the world somewhere will soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need.
We must also realize
as we come and honor Martin Luther King, we're going to talk about Rosewood, the man that was born that you might not know. Get your pencil and paper, write it down, and research it for you. My name is Pat. I'm back. I want to let you know we are back and we're bad. Let me say it again. Put it down. Sit back for a moment. You know, this is Dr. Martin Luther King Day on the January 15th. They're going to Dr. King. But some of you don't even know what happened. I was talking to Mother Nye. Mother Nye's really wrong because of answer. When you know the answer, they'll walk with you. They'll open a door for you. Some of you say, well, it ain't happened. What happened to one of us? So you have to know yourself and to be yourself, to act the way you ought to. So Dr. King was talking about, the lady asked me, why you play this record of Dr. King? Because Dr. King was what happened, came on the scene. And the newspaper let women was killed, babies cut out of their wombs. And you see that we are, black men and black women have to come together to fight this racism that's been going on. So it's important for you to stop fighting each other, stop the killing, save the babies. It's time for you to about all the massacres, all the murders been going on. So, right now, the scripture you read tonight is Exodus 14:14. God will fight your battles. White magic, you got to know what about. You get ready where doors open up for you. You know, witchcraft and all kinds of stuff that what happened, why we are doing what we do, and why we're doing it so much. And where you can get this and understand this is a lesson.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident,
that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor. The promises of the Great Society have been shut down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home. The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power. Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free,
He must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own emancipation proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Well, to move on out of it for a moment.
Now, what happened when Dr. King came on the scene? This is some of the history of the massacre and the killing of black people over. White supremacy did it.
Part of the state's curriculum for public. town of Rosewood, Florida, was a thriving community of African Americans. Turned their lives upside down, changed on January 4th, 1923. I have made a woman their way to the within hours, armed white mobs descended on the town, shooting at residents of the crowd. I came to the refuge, the home of the white business men, while others tried to fight back.
Recognized as a significant event in the history of the civil rights movement.
that took place in the United States. It was a brutal racial massacre targeted at blacks and resulted in the death of a large group of blacks. The problem was heard as the first racial massacre in Texas history. Slocum was a small town in East Texas with a population of over 400 people. Half of which was African American. And violence, and many white residents were members of the Ku Klux Klan. Prior to the massacre, a little race of black men the rumors spread that black residents had been buried in Slocum, the Klan had armed uprising. The tensions further
involved in the law of killing were honored with that action and with what they did. While the workers, including
state things by white Democrats, which included the disenfranchisement of little black people. Representation on their employer's character. This day of the area was until the 19th. The numbers keep increasing. I can't believe that matter. Back to my town of Louisiana. On April 13th, 1873, the small town began between black and white residents. Approximately 150 black people and 300 white people were taken from the village. Which was won narrowly by the Republicans. Despite their victory, white Democrats were and Colfax Parish and other friends they were white militia in direct rally to the predominantly black state militia under the governor's control. Colfax Parish was in the The 4,800 voters in the 872 election was split between approximately 2,400 mostly black voters and only 2 white Democrats. Local white Democratic mayors called for office first to take back my career itself for future assaults. For predominantly black, Republicans urged their supporters who were purposely black to defend them, although the thing they had on April 1st, despite their rules, between the new crews all over just on April 1st, more than 300 armed white, including members of the white, such as the white, and the attack courthouse. The white militia maneuvered a crackdown to fight off the courthouse. Some of the 60 black migrants, other was shot by one of them, prompting the white militia to retaliate by shooting the black migrants. Those who were hit were near black migrants,
and condemnation of violence.
the government's reaction to the EDE thinking that they like you did not take any concrete action to address the situation. You refused to move with it. Responsible for maintaining order in the city, failed to protect black residents from the violence. The government's response to the concern while being black vigilants that did not uphold their right citizens. You may think this is upsetting, but just realize how tough I'm going to bring down on black residents.
Empower your
a white man, What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it's called your lot to be a street sweeper, going out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music, sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry, sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And when you do this, you've mastered the length of life. This onward push to the end of self-fulfillment is the end of a person's life.
Now, don't stop here, though. You know, a lot of people get no further in life than the length. They develop their inner powers. They do their jobs well. Do you know they try to live as if nobody else lives in the world but themselves? And they use everybody as mere tools to get to where they're going. They don't love anybody but themselves. And the only kind of love that they really have for other people is utilitarian love. You know, they just love people that they can use. A lot of people never get beyond the first dimension of life. They use other people as mere steps to which or by which they can climb to their goals and their ambitions. These people don't work out well in life.
John Beveridge.
teachings of the Nation of Islam, an organization advocating for black separatism and self-determination. At that time, Malcolm showed scant interest in transforming his life, still caught up by his self-destructive behaviors. However, his brother Reginald would prove to be a turning point. In his letter, Reginald urged him to make two simple yet profound changes. Quit smoking and stop consuming pork. I'll show you how to get out of prison. These seemingly small adjustments carried significant symbolic weight within the context of the Nation of Islam's teachings. After an incident in which Reginald described the group's teachings, including the belief that white people were destined for divine punishment because of their long-standing oppression of blacks, Malcolm concluded that every relationship he had had with whites had been tainted by dishonesty, injustice, greed, and hatred. Malcolm, whose hostility to Christianity had earned him the prison nickname Satan, became receptive to the message of the Nation of Islam. In late 1948, he wrote to Elijah Muhammad, the leader of the Nation of Islam. Muhammad advised him to renounce his past, humbly bow in prayer to God, and promise never to engage in destructive behavior again. Though he laid all calm the inner struggle he had before bending his knees to pray, he soon became a member of the Nation of Islam, maintaining a regular correspondence with Muhammad. Malcolm's embrace of black separatism would shape the debate over how to achieve freedom and equality in a nation that has long denied a portion of the American citizenry and the full protection of their rights. It also laid the groundwork for the Black Power movement of the late 60s. In 1950, the FBI opened a file on him after he wrote a letter from prison to President Truman, expressing opposition to the Korean War and declaring himself a communist. That year, he also began citing his name, Malcolm X. In his autobiography, Malcolm explained that he had symbolized the true African family name that he could never know. For me, my ex replaced the white slave master name of Little, which some blue-eyed devil named Little had imposed upon my paternal forebears. After his parole in August 1952, he visited Elijah Muhammad in Chicago. From there, he would become a part of several of the nation's temples, when he would rapidly expand the membership of the Nation of Islam. His oratory skills make him a great speaker, commanding respect in any room that he lends his voice. However, this is not only what set him apart in those times. His physical presence, standing at 6 feet 3 inches and weighing 180 pounds, gave the opulence of power that drove people to him. In 1953, the FBI began surveillance of him, turning its attention to his possible communist associations to his rapid ascent in the Nation of Islam. The American public first became aware of Malcolm X in 1957 after Hinton Johnson, a Nation of Islam member, was beaten by two New York City police officers. On April 26th of that year, Johnson and two other Nation of Islam members saw the officers beating an African-American man with nightsticks. When they attempted to intervene, one of the officers turned on Johnson, beating him so severely that he suffered brain contusions and subdural hemorrhaging. Johnson and the other African-American men would be arrested. Alerted by a witness, Malcolm and a small group of Muslims went to the police station and demanded to see Johnson. Police initially denied that any Muslims were being held, but when the crowd grew to about 500, they allowed him to speak with Johnson. Afterward, he insisted on arranging for an ambulance to take Johnson to Harlem Hospital. Inside the station, he and an attorney would arrange for two of the Muslims to be released. However, Johnson would remain until his arraignment. Considering the situation to be at an impasse, Malcolm stepped outside the station house and gave a hand signal to the crowd. Nation members beginning instantly, after which the rest of the crowd also dispersed, which would be a testament to his public acceptance at the time. On seeing this, one police officer told the New York City Grand News, no one man should have that much power. Within a month, the New York City Police Department arranged to keep Malcolm X under surveillance. They would go as far as checking with authorities in other cities in which he had lived and prisons in which he had served time. In October, he sent an angry telegram to the police commissioner after a grand jury refused to indict the police officers that John Johnson. In response to this, the police department assigned undercover officers to infiltrate the Nation of Islam. In the late 1961, there were intense clashes between the Nation of Islam members and the police in South Central Los Angeles. Many Muslims were arrested, but later they were acquitted. However, these events led to tensions running high. In the early hours of April 27, 1962, two LAPD officers, without any provocation, attacked and beat several Muslims outside a Nation temple. This unjust act angered the Muslims, and a large crowd.
killed by a third officer. The situation escalated when over 70 backup officers arrived at the scene. They raided the mosque and started randomly beating members of the Nation of Islam. The police even ordered a shooting, injuring 7 Muslims. Tragically, a man named Rondo Stokes, a Korean War veteran, was shot from behind while raising his hands in surrender, and he lost his life. Another man named William X. Rogers was paralyzed for life after being shot in the back. After this horrifying incident, the Muslims refused, but the police faced no charges. The coroner even declared the killing of Ronald Stokes as justified, which added to the outrage. Malcolm X, deeply affected by the desecration of the mosque and the violence, felt a strong need for action. He turned to his own troubled past to rally the more hardened members of the Nation of Islam, urging them to seek violent revenge against the police. Malcolm X approached Elijah Muhammad, seeking his approval for this course of action, but to his astonishment, it was denied. This refusal shattered him. Additionally, when he expressed his desire for the Nation of Islam to collaborate with civil rights organizations, local politicians, and religious groups, Elijah Muhammad blocked him again. This marked a turning point in their deteriorating relationship. Their relationship deteriorated even further when rumors began circulating that Muhammad was conducting extramarital affairs with young Nation secretaries. At first, discounting the rumors, Malcolm X came to believe them after he spoke Muhammad's son once and met with the girls, making the accusations. Between 1964 and 1965, he reappeared in several national TV interviews. During these interviews, he provided evidence of his investigation, confirming multiple cases of child violence, which were corroborated by Elijah Muhammad himself. He discovered that 7 out of 8 girls involved had become pregnant as a result. He also revealed a chilling assassination attempt against him when an explosive device was found in his car. Alongside this, he received death threats in response to his exposure of Elijah Muhammad. The strained relationship would be completely broken years later. On December 1st, 1963, when asked about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, Malcolm X made a controversial statement. He said it was a case of chickens coming home to roost, and he added that this didn't make him sad, but rather glad. These remarks caused a lot of public outrage. The Nation of Islam, which had sent condolences to the Kennedy family and instructed its ministers not to comment on the assassination, publicly criticized Malcolm X. Although he remained a minister, he was forbidden from speaking publicly for 90 days. Malcolm X had become a media favorite by this time, and some members of the Nation saw him as a threat to Elijah Muhammad's leadership. Publishers were interested in his autobiography, and in a book read by Lewis Lomax about the Nation, Malcolm X was featured on the cover, and his speeches prominently included, while Muhammad's presence was limited. This made Muhammad envious and upset. On March 8, 1964, he announced his split from the Nation of Islam. Although he still considered himself a Muslim, he felt that the Nation had reached its limit due to its rigid teachings. He revealed his plans to establish a black nationalist organization to raise the political awareness of African Americans. He also expressed the desire to collaborate with other civil rights leaders, something he had been prevented from doing under Elijah Muhammad's leadership. After the Nation of Islam, Malcolm X founded 2 new groups. One was called Muslim Mosque, Incorporated, MMI, which focused on religion, and the other was the Organization of Afro-American Unities, a secular organization advocating for Pan-Africanism. A few days later, he would have a brief meeting with Martin Luther King Jr. It was their first and only encounter, which lasted only long enough for photographs to be taken. The meeting took place in Washington, D.C., while both men attended a Senate debate on the Civil Rights Bill in the U.S. Capitol. In April, he delivered a speech titled, The Ballot or the Bullet. In it, he encouraged African Americans to use their voting rights wisely, but warned that if the government continued to deny them full equality, they might have to consider taking up arms. In April 1964, with the financial support of his half-sister Ella Little Collins, Malcolm X embarked on a journey to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, to participate in the Hajj, the obligatory pilgrimage to Mecca for Muslims. However, due to his American citizenship and inability to speak Arabic, his status as a Muslim was questioned upon his arrival in Jeddah, causing a delay. Fortunately, he had a book called The Eternal Message of Muhammad by Abu Rahman Hassan Azam, which he received along with his visa approval. He reached out to the author, and through the help of Azam, various races interacting at the Eastern Hajj had a profound impact on it. It made him see Islam as a potential solution to racial problems, as he observed people from different backgrounds coming together in unity. During a visit to Africa, he particularly despised Moise Tshombe of the Congo, who he viewed as a Muslim figure. During his visit to New York in 1964, he referred to Tshombe as the worst African ever born. He accused him of committing the international crime of murdering Patrice Lumumba. He strongly criticized Tshombe's decision to employ white mercenaries to suppress the civil rebellion, alleging that they committed war crimes against the Congolese people. On returning to the United States, Malcolm condemned the United States for supporting Tshombe and what he called his hired killers, the white mercenaries. He expressed his anger about Operation Dragon Food, in which the U.S. Air Force dropped Belgian paratroopers in Stanleyville, now known as Kenneth Ghani, to rescue white Belgian hostages from the Simbas. He argued that there was a double standard when it came to valuing white and black lives. He claimed that the international community deemed it an emergency to protect white lives, but that nothing stopped the abuse inflicted on the Congolese by Tshombe mercenary. During his address, he was labeled a black Muslim, and instead emphasized being a Muslim happened to be black, reflecting his conversion to Islam. He purposely minimized white references to his religious hate speech to challenge his image as an angry black Muslim extremist, an image he has long contested. At Oxford, he was criticized by his bias on the Congolese crisis by the anti-American press. He pointed out that the Simbas were depicted as primitive and cannibalistic savages, who engaged in every respect for gravity, while Tshombe and the white mercenaries were portrayed favorably with little mention of their own atrocities. He said that advocating for equality and an end to racial discrimination against black people, Malcolm X strongly argued that if the U.S. government could or wouldn't protect black people, they can take matters into their own hands. Even self-defense and asserted that the United Members of OBAU were determined to protect themselves and fight for freedom, justice, and equality by any means necessary. During his discussions at the Billiken Labor Forum, hosted by the Socialist Workers' Party, Malcolm X criticized capitalism. When asked about his preferred political and economic system, he admitted to have a specific answer. However, he noted that it was not a coincidence that newly independent countries in the third world were turning towards socialism. When a reporter inquired about his thoughts on socialism, he asked if it was beneficial to black people. Upon hearing that individual, he responded, "Then I'm for it." While no longer advocating separation of black and white people, Malcolm X continued to